Come chat with Nicholas. He'll listen to you. Then he'll laugh, and then he'll cry with you. It's all in a safe space for you to speak your truth. Oh, come and chat with Nick.
Hi, everyone. Today we have Swire Ho joining us on the call, and it's a great privilege to have you on the call, Swire. I've seen you all about my LinkedIn page, so obviously you're a guy who knows how to use social media, so welcome.
Thank you so much for having me on, Lee.
Now, where are you? I'm in Oslo in Norway at the moment, so it is now, what's the time? It is now 7 o'clock in the evening. Whereabouts are you?
I'm in Los Angeles, California, 10 a.m. in the morning.
10 a.m. Okay, so we've got you nice and fresh. Okay, so this is my last shift of the day. So I'm still full of energy and I'm going to give you whatever I can. So Swire, you're known as the promo guy. And I was reading a little bit on your bio and you started out branding DVDs and CDs when that was still a thing. And I think you sold that business just in the nick of time as well. I want to talk about pivoting, because that whole industry of CDs, DVDs, that was a big one, I remember. People spent a fortune on machines, a fortune on branding. Tell us a little bit about how you started out in that and how you pivoted before the industry crashed.
That's really a great story behind it, at least what I think is a great story. So on the day of my honeymoon, I found out that the company that I worked for went out of business. So newlywed, you know, now I have no jobs. I was trained to become a recording engineer. So the last company that I worked for, they do recording, then they also do CD and DVD replication, which is copies of CDs when they finish recording. So I end up picking that part of the business up. And so I'm in LA, so a lot of people in the recording industry, a lot of film company. And then we do a lot of CDs. We, you know, we look at different packaging. You know, I actually dive deeper into the type of packaging that are trifold, branding. So, and along the way, musician and film company asked, do you guys do t-shirts? We finished our CD. We are going on tour. Do you guys sell t-shirts, hats, so we could sell? So that's our calling into the promotional product industry. So fast forward to 2013, I think I didn't see in a great vision. It was just by luck. Like, we wanted to get out. A local competitor always are fascinated by what we do. You know, say they wanted to purchase our company. So here you go. So, and then, you know, I just focused doing promotional product and branded merchandise exclusively.
Okay. Well, you know, I grew up in the printing business. So I know all the colors, I know all the papers, and it must be, it's a bit sad that industry is kind of, especially in the DVD and CD industry, has disappeared. I mean, all of that knowledge and all of those cool things that we could do on DVDs and CDs is pretty much vanished. So it's a dying art. But perhaps similar to vinyls, DVDs and CDs might have a comeback. What do you think?
It depends on who you talk to, because now I think they're making a comeback, but not in the CD format. You know, my daughter is a K-pop fan. So if you're a K-pop fan, you already know what I'm talking about. Like, they have fancy packaging. They can listen to the songs on Spotify, but they do still want to buy the photo cards, you know, right? The nice picture, the limited edition that they sell for $30, $50 US. So there is still a market to engage with fans, but as a musician, as a record label, it's your job to figure out, you know, who the target audience are and what is it that they actually want to buy.
So talking about target markets, the promotional industry is a huge industry. It's everything from cups, mugs, you know, corporate wear. So have you got a specific niche, or how did you choose the specific area that you focus on now? And how do you choose products that are going to excite people? Because the variety out there is ridiculous. So what is your process? How do you get to understand what your customer wants?
That's a great question. I relied on my QuickBooks, my accounting software. So because it changes, right? So a few years ago, when we were in the pandemic, tech company are making a lot of headway. They are increasing because they have technology. They don't require necessarily a warehouse. So technology company was good. But now I noticed that from the orders that we receive, that technology company, even if you go to like Facebook and Google, they are firing a lot of people. So tech company actually are not spending as much as they used to. So I took a look at that. So I would adjust my target audience based on what I see or what I can hear from the market, so to speak. But on the other hand, there are tons of events. Now, anywhere in the world that you can think of, there are people who want to come out, they want to party, they wanted to have a good time. So my event planners are making a big comeback. You know, they waited for the last 2 years and now everyone wants to party. So I do notice that the event industry is picking up. So I do see up and down for different clients. And what I like to do is I like to see in my QuickBooks, who are my top 10 clients? Who's spending the most money with me? What are those people? What do they look like? You know, what kind of titles do they have? Where do they hang out? So that kind of, you know, in your realm, Nick, to answer, should I be on Instagram? Should I be on Facebook? Or should I be on LinkedIn? Because you know what the title they are, you can guess, you know, and if you know how old they are, then you can probably guess where they hang out. So I generally use that to help myself focus on my effort.
So let's talk about social media, because this is a digital marketing podcast. From 2013 to now, how has the way that you've communicated to clients changed? I mean, I remember Facebook was huge in 2013, and Twitter was growing as well. How has your marketing landscape changed?
I think it changes a lot. I wish I have the tools that I have back then. You know, back then, I did a lot of email marketing. I do a lot of calling and I go to a lot of meetings to meet the potential client. But now you can actually, you know, with technology, you know, you and I, we're in different continent. You know, we get to talk. What I would suggest for people who are trying to think about growing your business, maybe in your physical area, you already saturated market, or there's a big player in your local market that you can never be compete with. Maybe go outside that a little bit. You know, a lot of people tell me that I'm weird. Yes, I'm weird. But if I push it out there, there are people who, I don't know why, might be drawn to my energy. So if you're using social media correctly, even if you are strange, if you have a unique product that you have, there are people in the world looking for unique product and weird, crazy stuff to watch every single day. So it's your job to create those content and feed it to them.
Did you ever think when you were younger that you would be a podcast host and a personality on LinkedIn?
No, not really. I like to talk, you know, I like to demonstrate and, you know, stand out right in front of a class. Usually when I was in school, that was a no-no, like you should sit down, listen and pay attention. But, you know, over the year, I learned that if you are really passionate about what you do, and if you're really trying to study, you know, and improve what you do daily, there are actually other people that would love to find out more about what you do. And, you know, it's good that, because I know that I will be talking about it and I will be going on other people's podcasts as a guest, I better know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah. I think people gravitate towards personalities. And I think in this industry that we're in now, you either have the enormous players or the small business players. The in-between space is always the toughest to be. Mm. And you've been in business for a while. That movement from starting your own business must have been stressful, number one, just getting married and so on. The scaling of your business, how have you done that? Are you focused more on work-life balance, or is it work? And what is your sort of vision for your business, excluding any more COVID lockdowns, which I hope don't happen, over the next couple of years? What is your vision for the next couple of years in the promotional business?
I'm a big component of work-life balance. And with technology, I actually clone more Swire. You know, you think that I'm everywhere, but, you know, as you know, Nick, like you could schedule your post. I don't have to actually be there and, you know, press the button all the time. I could actually plan it out and execute it. What I would like to do is to continue to learn about the market around me, especially, you know, clients that I have that I think we're not working with them right now, but there are potential back then. But in order to do that, they will actually have to see you in the digital marketing space, or they will, every time, you know, they're on LinkedIn, maybe their colleagues are now talking about this person. You know, who are they? Like, let me look at them and see what they post. And then my guesting episode, you know, some of the blogs that I write will be on their radar. So when the time that I finally reach them, it seems like I don't know you, but I have known you from the articles that you wrote, and I've seen you talk before, because I think, you know, speaking, especially virtually, is important for me because I'm a salesperson. So there are people that, and I come to accept that, you know, there are people that will work with me and there are people who will never work with me. And by me talking and them listening to me talk, they could filter it down themselves already. So by the time that we actually hop on a actual business call, you know, we kind of know each other already. You know, I know how this guy acts and move and, you know, whatever that he does, right? So I think it's actually a helpful thing that technologies have brought us.
Well, it goes to trust. I mean, in your particular industry, I'm sure a lot of people have been burnt by substandard products, things not arriving on time for the event. And by knowing that you're out there and they can call you out if you have a bad customer experience is one of the benefits or the drawbacks of being sort of, you know, a personality. Now, California, which is, I guess, where you live, is probably, it's one of the largest economies in the world. So I think California by itself is, you know, the number five biggest, you know, economy in the world. So there's plenty of scope for you just to focus your attention in the LA area or in California. Is it difficult for you to branch out into other states? Have you got interest from other states, or do you focus primarily in a sort of a specific geographic area?
That's a good question. And as a small business, you know, I do need to focus on my effort. You know, like you said, in the promotional product industry, everyone potentially can be your client, but I don't really have time or the resources to go over everyone. For example, let me tell you a recent interest of mine, and I think that will bring a lot of business to us if I do it right. In 2028, the Los Angeles is going to host the Olympic game. What means to that is a lot of fans will be coming, you know, a lot of brand will be advertising during the Olympic game. So there are going to be a lot of needs and demand for the products that we do, t-shirts, you know, maybe giveaways, or maybe like a, you know, sample drawing for potential clients' product. So I'm actually going deeper, you know, into the planning committee. I know that at the LA Chamber, which I belong to, the CEO of LA Chamber is actually on the committee for the LA 28 effort. So I'm putting my chips over there, you know, hoping that, and we know that, you know, by having Olympics, there's a lot of money going in, there's a lot of infrastructure. So I would say I like to place myself at where I think the money is going to go. And, you know, that if I could somehow be resourceful to those money, then I could get more business that way. So if that's answer your questions.
Yeah, well, and that's also talking about forward planning. I mean, that's 2028, but I suppose your orders will come in hopefully a year before that. But there's a lot of, it's quite a long runway until you see results in that. So you've got to start building up the networks, you know, developing products and that are going to be useful for when the Olympics come about. So that's very exciting. But it does help us move into our next point, which is LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, X, Google, etc. are fantastic for letting customers find out about you. But I think a lot of people forget about the face-to-face and about building real networks. And you're a member of the LA Chamber of Commerce, yeah? Mm-hmm. Talk to me about why that's valuable and why should other folks look at actually going to meetings and meeting real people versus just hoping that people will find them on LinkedIn and Facebook and Instagram?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And I think everyone, we were so used to virtual networking, right? You know, we are comfortable and maybe you work from home that you don't have to go out anymore and do business. But I would encourage you to go to your local chamber or maybe a association for your industry. Because what I found is I'm not only a member, I'm also an ambassador for the LA Chamber, which means that they will send me to different meetings to talk to people. You know, me in the beginning when I started my business, I really shy when I go to business networking. But by putting myself being an ambassador, I'm kind of forced to talk to people. And think about people. Maybe you're trying to talk to a C-level executive. Try getting through them with an email. Try getting through them with LinkedIn will tell them, you know, tell you that you can get through to them. But it doesn't, it will never be said if you meet that person in a Chamber of Commerce meeting and you actually shook their hand and you make your impression, and then you can follow up with your social media strategy. It's always, humans like to interact with other humans, and they can really see your body language. They can see how you talk, how you compose yourself. And then if you're ready, you can really, you know, to make them curious about what you're trying to say. And then your social media and digital marketing effort can actually assist you with that. But if I would have picked to do, let's do one form of marketing, it would be in-person networking.
Yeah, I agree. I've had some of my best successes through chambers, whether it's been in Sri Lanka, the South African Nigeria Chamber of Commerce, and here in Norway, I'm going to be joining the Africa Norway or the Norway Africa Chamber of Commerce and other groups like that. So it also just opens you to a totally new market of people as well. So I find that a very useful marketing activity. Now to onto something a little bit more fun. I read that you are a kettlebell instructor. How did you get into kettlebells, and what weights are you doing now? I need to know how many Russian get-ups can you do?
Well, I first came in contact with kettlebell actually by accident. I read Tim Ferriss' book. I think it's For Our Body. So I found out about Pavel Tasulin, which is the chairman of Strong First. He's known as the evil Russian guy who brought, you know, kettlebell to the U.S. So I got certified as a SFC1 kettlebell instructor in 2018, and I did the Strong First Lifter, which is the barbell certification. My weight is 140 right now, so I normally use the 24 kilogram kettlebell. When I do my snatches, I normally use like 20K.
Okay, so that's quite significant. Something when I was, I did it quite aggressively with my wife as well. She's also quite good at kettlebells. And it was amazing seeing very strong guys coming in to do the kettlebells and starting with the 8 kilogram, 16 kilogram, etc., and not managing to go through even one rep of all of the kettlebell exercises, because it's a totally different use of your body. So even strong guys can't manage it. So it really is that repetition. It's a fantastic workout. I love it.
Yeah, and this is not, I think this is related, right? When, let's say you work from home, right? So you could put a kettlebell, like even at work, but you know, don't hit someone, right? So yeah. What I like to do is, let's say you've been sitting for a long time, you've been in a meeting. What if you can plan out, let's you know, if you have access to a kettlebell, I would assume every meeting or every half an hour, you go out and do 10 swings, which will take you about maybe a minute, 2 minutes max. And then what you do, you actually, because you're sitting for a long time, then your hip are sleeping, right? Mm. But by doing kettlebell swing, then you're waking up the hips, you're waking up your entire body. So your blood actually gets flowing. Try doing that every time that you feel really sluggish, or maybe in the afternoon you have a big lunch, right? You want to go to sleep. Instead, do a maybe couple set of kettlebell swing and go back to work. See if that changes your mood and if that's improved your productivity.
Yeah, good idea. Well, I moved today. So I went up four flights of stairs 15 times today. So I've definitely not skipped leg day, and I was, you know, carrying bags. I feel like I've done my exercise for today. Swai, thank you so much for your time today. Some really good insights into especially getting into your community, focusing on an area that you can win at, and a little bit about keeping your core strength and your hips going with kettlebells. It's been good to meet you, and I hope to chat to you again.
Thank you so much, Nick.
Come chat with Nicholas. He'll listen to you. Then he'll laugh, and then he'll cry with you. It's all in a safe space for you to speak your truth.